this is Stephanie Izard, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
I really do believe that something's got a hold on me here.
720 WGN on the road with Dane live here, Allstate Showcase Studio. Joey Gelman in the booth, David Hammond to my right. Riding shotgun for the program. Again, 312-981-7200. You can text in. You can call in and give it to Joey, your first car, your favorite car, or your dream car. You can even email if you want to, plus any extra information or cool pictures of your car you want to. You can do that on the road with Dane at gmail.com. So many people are taking to the road, whether it's on the road to those kind of road trips or just kind of transformative travel when you're getting that opportunity in the summertime to get out there, and people are looking for options. And sometimes some are obvious, and sometimes some are really, really great, but sort of under the radar. And Dave Hammond, he is dining and drinking editor for New City, but also, an avid traveler, right? You have been doing this travel thing for your entire life. And one of the places that you had come in contact that you thought, hey, the listeners would love to hear about this it's the Azores, right?
The Azores. Yeah, my wife really wanted to go there. And honestly, when I heard that she wanted to go, I had to kind of Google the Azores to find out where it is. now I know, and I'll share that with our listeners.
You're like, it's south of Berwyn.
It is definitely. It's off the coast, like 1,000 miles off the coast of Portugal, west of Portugal. So it's there are 9 islands in all. They're volcanic islands. They were formed like 1.5 million years ago.
We're not going to hold you to the exact.
Yeah, right. But there is kind of an interesting. A lot of the islands are still covered in volcanic rock. St. George, which is really the most popular island, is very green and lush because it's a mere 300,000 years older than any of the other islands. So it had chance for all this volcanic rock to be pulverized into eternity. Islands like Pico must have dug through many feet of lava, hardened, of course, and then they've got all this lava. What the hell are they going to do with it? They build like these fences around all their property. So the vineyards, and there's quite a few vineyards on Pico, one of the Azores, that they're like these 10-foot square little garden areas, and in a vineyard there may be 20 of these, and these volcanic rocks absorb heat during the day, and then at night they keep the vines warm because they have all this stored up energy. Well, we went with a company called Azores Getaways, and they arranged everything for us. But there were times when we kind of got off the itinerary and just went exploring for ourselves. And these are places like I've never seen before. They're otherworldly. They're a little bit like Iceland, which is also volcanic. So there's like steam vents that are kind of blasting out of the ground.
Wow.
And in the Azores, they actually cook in these vents. So they have, and food is my thing, so I'm interested in what they're doing with that. But there's like these blasts of extremely hot heat coming out of the ground. Soon there'll be a volcano. I mean, eventually it'll blow. There'll be a volcano. But this heat is currently escaping through these air vents. And they lower like pails filled with food in there, and they cook. It's a novelty thing. This isn't the way the citizens.
This is going to be the next big craze. Hey, forget about the Filipino food. This is going to be the Azorean, volcanic funnel food. Well, Iceland is one of those. And it happens, right? As you're kind of just here, it's either that next kind of thing that gets some attention. There's so many amazing places around the world to see off what you would say the beaten path of typical vacation destinations. Iceland is one that has been, I've known before, if it was like 5-6 years ago, I wouldn't have known anyone who had been there. And now I know a bunch of people have been there. Certainly they've got those springs, volcanic. You think of it still as kind of a, like an Arctic kind of thing, right? But are the Azores described what we would, is it Bora Bora? Is it Bali? Is it Fiji? Is it like that?
Well, it's Europe. They speak Portuguese and they consider themselves, a part of Portugal, unlike the Sicilians consider themselves or don't consider themselves part of Italy. I mean, the Sicilians think of themselves as kind of a separate.
So they're European. So I'm trying to describe Europeans in just kind of a general way. So they're wearing like Dockers and they're chain smoking, or are these like indigenous island people?
There are no indigenous island people. They don't think anybody lived on the Azores.
Are you serious?
Before the Portuguese got there. It's 1,000 miles from Portugal, and a lot of it is volcanic. It's a black volcanic, kind of like parts of Hawaii.
You'd have to be really, really, really lost for a really long time. I don't know if there's an app for that, right? An ancient app that'll get you 1,000 miles from Portugal. So they found it and they decided what's interesting. So what are the reasons to go there, and what do you see?
Well, one of the reasons to go there is it's pretty much unlike anywhere else I've ever been on the planet. And with it's only, I mean, we mentioned Iceland. Iceland's only like 3.5-4 hours from New York. Oh. Azores are only about 4 hours or so from Boston. They have direct flights from Boston to the Azores. They have direct flights from Oakland, California to the Azores. So these are it's a little bit longer.
I'm getting a conflicting picture because I'm seeing like, you know, I'm seeing vineyards with little volcanic fences. I'm seeing volcanoes. And then I'm seeing a giant metropolitan airport.
Oh, there are. Oh, no. Okay. No, the airport is, it's kind of like Midway was in the 50s, I'd say, maybe a okay. little bit smaller than that. But and that's why these companies like Azores Getaways is trying to promote tourism there because people don't know about it.
Right.
It's an interesting place to go. They shot episodes of Doctor Who on parts of the Azores because it looks like another planet. But then there are these islands like St. George that are lush and beautiful and look like practically like a tropical island.
Is it the kind of thing that you would maybe look into doing if you were going to maybe visit Hawaii, where you typically would visit maybe one or two or three different places? So maybe you'll get your tropical lush island fix on there. You'll get some of the interest in some of the newer ones and in the other ones, and so you can kind of bulk them together. Is that what people do?
Yeah, I mean, we visited three islands, and usually people will visit more than one. I mean, unless your time's extremely limited, and then you just pick out one frequently, St. George, and stay on that. We didn't actually go to St. George. We went to Terceira, Pico, and Fayal. And that's why it's nice to have an agency pull all that stuff together for you, because there's inter-island travel that you want to do. You want to do road trips
right.
once you're in the Azores.
Well, you want some kind of guide right. to be able to say, like, here's some things, so you're not just kind of floundering out there trying to figure it out. When you mention, and that's one of the things that you go to some of these places, when you're going to have the sights, the sounds of whatever the environment is, but if there were no people there, you know, so you're getting, is it Portuguese food? Granted, they're cooking it in a volcano.
No, but not often. I mean, that's more of like a novelty that they do now and again. It's a, yes, it's very much like Portuguese food. They have some of their unique dishes like alcatra, which is a stew. And they have, here's kind of a weird thing, on Terceira, they have bullfights May through October in the streets. In the streets.
So it's like that. It's like that cul-de-sac hockey game that you did when you were a kid.
Only with raging bulls. And they pick a different town every night, and it's like every night they pick a town.
Is it like a car? Is there like Crazy Larry's? You know, on the road bullfighting. You know, like they pull up and like they set up in the Kmart parking lot, but it's the same guys.
It's easy, but it's guys. They have guys in white shirts and like Zorro hats who have a rope attached to the bull's neck, so in case he goes completely wild, they can kind of restrain him.
Nice.
But the people in these villages, mostly men. Run out into the street with umbrellas frequently because that's what they use to attract the bull's attention. Bull charges after him, just like in Pamplona. They go diving over fences to get away from the bull.
Wait a minute. Okay, so you're doing it in the street, and the local residents are the kind of de facto bullfighters?
They call it bullfighting, but it's more like running with the bulls. There's not a matador or anybody with a cape and a sword okay. and stuff like that. That's... And the bull doesn't die.
Nice.
It is kind of nice. I mean,
because you wouldn't want to have the tilt-a-whirl going and then smash it every night, right? You want to move it to the next town.
And see this dead animal being carted off.
That's not good for
the eyes of the kid.
That isn't good for
right.
business.
Right, right. So, but that's kind of an unusual, and there are many those unique little Azorean customs that have grown up independently of Portugal. So it's a unique culture connected wow. to the mainland culture, but different in a lot of ways. And the wow. bullfighting in the streets is one of those things that make Terceira, at least, unique.
So they enjoy it. Is it something that is it something that a tourist would want to see? Or
yes.
is there a way that they can kind of experience it at a safe distance? Or is there
yes.
a waiver form to sign?
No, we had... knew somebody at a bar or something and let us stand up on a roof and watch the bulls go charging by chasing people.
Okay.
And it is, I mean, people have a problem with bullfighting, and the bulls are definitely being teased and tormented. They're not being killed. And they're
but
very
their feelings are being hurt.
No, I think they're actually...
they're performers, you think, right?
Yes, and I think they may actually like striking back at the humans who are pissing them... Oh, excuse me. Tormenting them.
That are tormenting them.
Tormenting them. And yeah, people have kind of a problem with that, and I respect it. But I think that if you eat meat in this country, which is a very hard, it's hard to judge. I love beef. it's hard to justify being a carnivore, that is, raising an animal and then killing it and raising it in sometimes inhumane circumstances. I think if you're okay with eating beef, how could you not be okay with bullfights?
Yeah, or even just bull kind of interaction, like this cold...
Bull interaction.
Like, like the cul-de-sac bullfight that's a... Well, I don't know. I think that's crazy. That's interesting. The Azores, we're going to talk about it. Now, do you have anything online that you could point people to related to the Azores? Did you do anything where they... Or a site where they can get some more information?
Well, Azores Getaways is a is a great site to go to. I mean, they'll lay out all the options of, you know, where you can visit.
Okay. All right. So that's one thing. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dave Hammond is with us. We've got two separate things we definitely want to talk with him about before the end of the show. One is this is a destination that everybody knows of, has heard of. Probably a good percentage of us as listeners have been to. But here are some different ways to experience Mexico. We're going to talk about that before the end of the program. And then you think of the lost cities of the Midwest, right? Things that are happening within that whole road trip, day trip kind of range that are a world away, a civilization away, and historically important. We'll talk about that as well. So we're going to take a quick break. It's here. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN. Give me fuel. Give me fire. Give
me that which I desire. Hey, this is Kevin Harvick, driver of the number 4 Jimmy John's Ford Fusion, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
720 WGN. On the Road with Dane here, Allstate Showcase Studio, live on Michigan Avenue. And a lot of the drivers, most of them, almost all of them from the Monster Energy Cup Series for NASCAR are going to be down a road trip away at Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the Brickyard 400. It is something that I have covered many, many times and attended many, many times, and encourage everybody to get down there. Take your road trip to Indiana, get down there, and you can get some tickets. I think kids under, I don't know if it's under 16. I wish I had more information about it. I know they're it's very price considered, and I think for $40 you can get in there and check out that race. I might have a couple tickets. I'll know before the end of the show today. But again, you have to be able to get there and go. It's only 2.5 hours away to Indianapolis if you leave early. So, but it's not, you know, Schaumburg. So you've got to be able to attend. What also isn't Schaumburg is Mexico. Dave Hammond is in studio with us. He is the dining and drinking editor for New City and a guy who travels a lot and has some great experiences and I think a really cool perspective, not only on food, but also fun and some of those things. And Mexico is a place that I did my honeymoon in Mexico. I have been to Mexico a number of times on vacation to places that are, you know, on the normal tourist track, let's say Cancun or Riviera Maya or someplace like that. Now you had the opportunity, and Lou Bank, if you don't know him, people, he is kind of the maestro of mezcal. He is one of those great ambassadors for this spirit, and he walks the walk. I mean, this is a guy that isn't just knowledgeable and in tune. He is on a regular basis out there, not only promoting, but doing it, getting there, showing up. And you, David, got a chance to go with him. Yeah. And Mexico is one of those places that, when you think about getting off of that tourist track, it can be thought of as genuinely dangerous, right?
Yes. Oaxaca happens to be one of those areas that is not so dangerous. And Yucatan as well, where we were last month. Oaxaca and Yucatan are both kind of not on the narco trafficking flight path.
Which so you won't run into your dangerous types.
Your homicidal drug dealer, right? Not much. Although Cancun is getting kind of dangerous. I just read about a shooting this morning. I think it's unfortunate that a lot of people's only introduction to the Yucatan, which is on the peninsula that comes up south in southern Mexico, when a lot of people, when they go to the Yucatan, just go to Cozumel or Cancun, which are great places, although Cancun's getting a little dangerous. The interior of the peninsula, though, is where all the archaeological zones are, or the major ones. Tulum is nice. It's near Cancun. That's cool. I'm glad people get a chance to visit it. But there are estimated to be 70 indigenous metropolitan centers in Yucatan, many of them covered over by jungle. Some excavated. You probably heard of the big ones like Chichen Itza, Ishmael, so on. But we went to some that were virtually unknown and on this last trip, and some that are just being uncovered. We were going through this little town, and there's a pyramid in this little town right next to a convenience store and a bank. There are kids playing on top of it. And
how big a pyramid was this?
It was, I don't know. I guess it was maybe 6.5 stories.
Wow.
Like
okay. So sizable.
Amazing.
Not the thing you'd just as you're building the convenience store, What's that?
Well, it was probably a hillock. It probably looked like a little mountain in the city. And they may have known that, oh, yeah, there's something buried under that. But due to a lot of things like lack of archaeological interest and also kind of a lack of local interest, I'm not sure the locals really understood what an incredible tourist destination they
might have. You've got a potential, especially now with, I just think the world has become a much smaller place with social media and the internet. You have the ability to advertise on an individual and super cost effective, almost free way. You know, if you can get some people like yourself as ambassadors to say, hey, this is something to check out, it could be a goldmine for the city.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And in Oaxaca, the allure was different. We were going there for mezcal, and you can still get some of the best mezcal in the world. In fact, I would say you can definitely get the best mezcal in the world in Oaxaca. It's produced in like 9 different states of Mexico. By law, you can only call it mezcal if you're licensed and certified by the government. The sanctioning body estimates that 80% of the mezcal that's produced in Oaxaca is not certified. So there's a lot of people making uncertified mezcal, as they have for a very, very long time, in some cases centuries, for a very hyper-local population. The guys we visited, like I brought some mezcal today from Victor Ramos, he produces, I mean, he's doing this all by hand. He's planting the agave, he's harvesting the agave, he's grinding it, you know, with the help of a few workmen, fermenting it, and then distilling it pretty much all by himself. And he's not putting it into bottles. We showed up there, we bought a case of water, you know, drinking water, distilled water. We drank it. We threw some out. We basically needed the bottles because when we went to these little places, these guys don't have bottles. They don't need stinking bottles. They want, you know, you bring your bucket, your canteen, whatever. You fill it up there. And then you take it to the quinceañera or the religious festival or whatever. It's all for a local group. And the prices are, we paid between $5 and maybe $30 per liter. For some incredible stuff.
For the listeners, just as kind of a little bit of background, is that, you know, mezcal is kind of the ancient and traditional. It's in the team photo of tequila, right? Yes. It's along in that kind of same.
A distilled agave spirit. It's made from the agave, which looks a little like a cactus. It's kind of a spiny plant, and they cook the kind of the heart of the plant, crush it, add water, ferment, distill. That's how you make tequila. Or mezcal.
In so much in the traditional way as well. It reminds me a little bit, and you could tell me if this has any kind of correlation, is, you know, in the jungles in South America where they had the acai berry, which was something that the locals ate, and it had health properties and antioxidants. And then, you know, we kind of got a hold of the idea and then went down there and just kind of shook everything up. Whereas you've got with mezcal, they've been making it for generations for personal consumption of the village. And now the world wants some. How are they dealing with that?
Well, these little mezcal makers, this 80% of the mezcal makers in Oaxaca who are not certified, they're never going to be selling stuff in Chicago because they'd have to be certified. And that means they have to pay the equivalent to like a year's wages just to be sanctioned by the government. It's a heavily politicized, and I'm going to guess corrupt, operation. I mean, it's weird because there's like little pockets in Guerrero and so on that are sanctioned to make mezcal, places where they didn't even traditionally make mezcal. But due to some kind of lobbying, shenanigans, payoffs, and so on, the government has said, okay, you can bottle what we're going to allow you to call mezcal rather than just distilled agave spirits.
Dave Hammond is with us. He is the editor, the dining and drinking editor over there at New City, and he was a mezcal mule. We'll find out where we can read one of those great pieces as well. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, before we send it to news, we will do all of that. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN. WGN On the Road with Dane here live. Allstate Showcase Studio to my right, riding shotgun for the entire duration of the program. David Hammond, he is here. Joy Gelman is in the booth manning all of the button switches, pulleys, levers, all the blinking things. He's doing that. Now, Dave, before we went to news, we talked a little bit about, mezcal. I think some of the things that are going on, the excitement that it is generating in the spirits community, it's become really hot and popular. There is no substitute really for being there and getting to see it because it is such a cool traditional process.
And there are some types of mezcal brands, let's call them that you can't get in the United States. They're not making it here now.
Is it like Pablo's brand? I mean, because the way it's been described to me by you and by others is that it's a guy with a leather bag and a mule and a big rock, and that's about it, right? And so if you're into like his brand or... Is that it?
These things are not, as I was saying, they don't have their own bottles even, so they don't have brands and logos. These are guys whose father, grandfather, great-grandfather, they made mezcal for their village, for the religious celebrations, for quinceañeras and so on, and they're still doing it. Now, if people in Chicago want to try some of these obscure mezcals, some of which are perhaps uncertified and not available in the U.S., Lou Bank has his organization called Sacred, which stands for Saving Agave for Culture, Recreation, and Education. He runs a tour called the Agave Triangle. Just Google Agave Triangle, and you pay like $25 or something like that, and then you go to three different bar restaurants in the Logan Square area, and you get a little, the bartender will tell you a little about the agave.
Nice.
And you can try this agave, and you kind of do it at your own speed. If you want, you know, if you want to try some other stuff, I'm sure you can. But it's a way to try some very good mezcals curated by Lou Bank and get a little bit of education about this beverage that's becoming kind of the hot thing.
It is. Right. That's undeniable. It is becoming definitely the hot thing. So that's some great ways to experience it. We'll talk about some ways to experience some of that travel. When it comes to an opportunity, we've got a couple minutes left. Dave, when you think about road trips and opportunities to see lost cities, I know we're going to have to probably do a separate interview on this to fully expand it, but there are some lost cities right here in the Midwest.
And when we talk about lost cities, we're talking about former places where lots of indigenous people once lived in the Midwest, like mentioned Cahokia, right outside St. Louis. There's Aztlan, which is about 50 miles west of Milwaukee. They've reconstructed a stockade surrounding a huge area. They found these little like decaying fence posts and figured out where the stockade would go. So they've rebuilt that. There's an existing pyramid there, and it costs like $5 to get in. And then there's Henschel's. It's Henschel's Indian Museum and Trout Farm.
Henschel is, of course, there's Sitting Bull. There was like Geronimo, and then there was Henschel.
This is like an amateur archaeologist guy. They actually named a projectile point after him. It's called Henschel's Point. It's like a type of arrowhead that he found on his farm, and now it's cataloged under his name. He's a guy who's just totally enthusiastic about indigenous people. And he has, like, people will come in, native folks will come in and say, you know, you can't really put that in a display case. That is a sacred item. He takes the stuff out. He just says, okay, I'll take your word for it.
Well, you know what? You want to go, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. And when here in the area and you've got a lost city, you want to kind of go with the program here. I know, and before we come back to wrap it all up, we've got to take a quick break, is that let the listeners know you're going to be writing a story for the Tribune
on
this.
Yeah, the story, it'll actually be appearing online this coming week and then in print a week from tomorrow, Sunday. It's called Exploring Lost Cities of the Midwest. Be lots of pictures, explanations of when you can go, how you can get there, how much it costs to get into these sites, and it's all very minimal. I mean, it's a great kind of road trip and a way to educate kids about the people who were living here before we got here, long before we got here.
Very cool stuff. Quick break. We'll be back to wrap it up on the road with Dane, 720 WGN.